This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I know a lot of you like our weekly Q&A with Layla because we've been running stats on the popularity of our podcast, and we've had regularly up to 200,000 individual downloads of our podcast per month. It is a growing phenomenon, I guess, via word of mouth. More and more people are choosing to listen. And you know, an interesting fact about podcasts, this is a little bit of an aside. O'Reilly.
O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly just got canned.
Yeah.
He got canned at Fox.
Very big story.
And which is amazing because he's such a fixture of talk TV,
yes.
You know, and his program was an institution, and all of a sudden, he went on vacation and he's gone. You know, they unceremoniously fired him.
Yeah.
And so what does he do? He starts a radio podcast.
Yeah.
Which is amazing to me. I mean, look, regardless of what you think about, you know, Bill O'Reilly.
Sure.
He's a media figure, and it's impressive to me that a media figure of that stature should choose to communicate with his audience via podcasts, which I love. I think it's a great communications vehicle, and it's so much easier than TV. I mean, all he has to do is he's got, you know, a mic, and you know, he's got a bit of a script. He thinks about what he wants to talk about, and then he delivers it without, you know, makeup, cameras. You know, he doesn't have to put on a suit and tie,
right?
And he communicates with his literally millions of followers.
Yeah.
And I think that's the beauty of this medium. It's very disruptive in a way. It's like, okay, so Fox, you don't want me? I'll still communicate with my people.
There you go. That's a good thing. And the one thing about podcasts is you could download them anytime. I mean, you could probably watch your television shows whenever you want with, you know, playback and so forth and everything. But, you know, he's already got quite the following. So
right. And the
should establish it again in no time.
Yeah, no, clearly. Yeah. But here's the difference. He charges. You've got to be a member of the Bill O'Reilly Premium Club. And that's not something we're going to do. We have a different business model here. We have sponsors, which we're happy to give time to. Which reminds me, this is a good point at which to pause because we'd like you to hear this announcement from one of the people who, one of the organizations that makes this podcast possible. So here goes.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout at tryzona.com.
Okay, back to business here. And, you know, we've digressed a lot. So let's get back.
It's part of the fun.
Let's get back to the actual subject matter of our Q&A, which is to answer questions.
We've got an email from Jerry. What are your thoughts? Is it possible for an elderly person to be over-medicated with blood pressure medication, leading to a stroke because blood pressure is too low?
What a great question. And the answer is yes. And only recently has it been recognized as a serious problem. This is referred to as the J-shaped curve of blood pressure control. And it has to do with the fact that let's visualize everyone at J, okay? Mm-hmm. And where the J starts off on the left, it's kind of high.
Yep.
And then the J dips down, mm-hmm. and then the J takes off to an even higher level than it was before. Mm-hmm. That's the shape of a J. So they have a J-shaped curve for blood pressure control. And if your blood pressure is not controlled, you are on the beginning part of the J, the left side of the J.
Uh-huh.
As you begin to control your blood pressure, you start to go lower to the point where you get the best possible result at the bottom of the J. But then as you continue to lower blood pressure, your risk soars.
Diminishing returns. Beyond that.
So why is that? Well, it's thought that especially in older individuals who have stiffening of the arteries, they're not flexible anymore, mm-hmm. that lowering blood pressure is a little bit like when, you know, they say, or let's say you're in one of those buildings where when everybody's taking a shower at 7:30 in the morning, you can't get any water pressure out of your shower head. Do you live in a building like that?
I do. It's not bad, but yeah, I know there are certain times a day, and then others, if it's 5 a.m., full blast. But
Or sometimes it's going to be just the cold water.
So
all of a sudden, it's like somebody...
Or the hot doesn't happen immediately.
Somebody next door is taking a shower.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, the showers are adjacent to each other in these buildings. And they're stealing your cold water. All of a sudden, you go, oh, my God, I'm getting scalded.
Yeah.
That's actually a little bit what happens is that the pressure through the pipes is mm-hmm. diminished. And, oh, not enough blood gets to the brain. Mm-hmm. And that can result in a fainting episode, a brownout, or even a stroke. Mm-hmm. Even a stroke. Why? Because the blood doesn't flow well. It pools. Blood can form. So,
would this also apply to people who have naturally very low blood pressure, not on blood pressure medication?
Not so much likely that they're going to have a stroke.
Okay.
But they're going to feel weak and woozy, and they're going to have what's called syncope, mm-hmm. or fainting. Mm-hmm. And syncope is really common in the elderly, and it could be from overdosing on medications.
Wow.
And part of the problem is that if you can visualize a J that's very narrow, you know, there's J's that are, you know, wide J's, and there are J's that are very narrow, where the bottom part is really horizontally narrow.
Mm-hmm.
That there is a narrow window of efficacy for blood pressure medication. In other words, it may take two or three blood pressure medications to get your blood pressure down sufficiently.
Yeah.
But pretty quickly, that two or three different medications simultaneously will result in over-medication.
Wow.
So it's like the Goldilocks principle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the too hot, too cold, just right. The just right gets very narrow. One of the reasons why, even if patients are dependent on medications, we recommend natural blood pressure control.
Yes.
Through all the measures of diet, all the measures of exercise, mm-hmm. all the supplements that we find beneficial for blood pressure, like fish oil, like chiolic H garlic extract, mm-hmm. like coenzyme Q10, mm-hmm. like magnesium.
Like olive leaf.
Olive leaf also, mm-hmm. great. Nitric oxide.
Arginine. Yeah,
profusia. The beet extracts, mm-hmm. you know, that are nitrate suppliers. But also the Zona Plus, which is the handheld device, which is helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. People look at me when I demonstrate it for them. That's all I do? I grip mm-hmm. it?
Yeah.
And you do three cycles of gripping in either hand, and you do this every day.
Yeah, it was actually discovered by the Air Force, is that they found that hand grip exercise helped to control blood pressure. And one of the reasons for that is that if you have high blood pressure, it is a disqualifier for Air Force pilots. And so they did everything in their power to not require medication. I'm not sure what the rules are now. If you have high blood pressure, do you wash out as a pilot?
That's interesting.
But they use this method as a way of requalifying for flight when they were diagnosed as hypertensive.
Wow.
By the way, another thing that, this mm-hmm. just to throw it in as yet another digression, recent big study,
mm-hmm.
sodium restriction.
Oh.
Sodium restriction
Yeah.
And following the guidelines of the World Health Organization, the American Heart Association, which is to get your sodium below 2.5 grams per day, which is hard because your diet's going to be very bland.
Yeah.
But they say everybody should do it. Everybody should do it. Well, they did a trial with middle-aged folks, and what they found is their blood pressure went up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why? It's a compensatory mechanism.
Yes.
It's, you don't have enough sodium, your blood volume will be decreased, and therefore your blood vessels contract to compensate for that. So it's,
why is that not understood?
Only is it not understood, but the opposite message is being promulgated. I go on Facebook and I see stuff from American Heart Association, which is a low salt campaign.
I know.
How wrongheaded is that?
Totally.
And what are they going to do with that campaign when it becomes totally clear that they're doing people a disservice?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, total misdirection.
Mm.
That's why people don't trust health authorities and they don't trust the government when the recommendations are so wrongheaded. They were so wrong on saturated fats and now they're wrong on sodium.
They need to focus more on diet. And in most cases, it's not about the sodium, but about the ratio of potassium to sodium. And this is why the DASH diet, dietary approaches to stop hypertension, DASH, is popular for that reason. Because
of all the potassium. Lots of fruits and vegetables, yeah.
So, wow. And it's not a one-size-fits-all gig either.
And by the way, this does not mean that some people don't benefit from sodium restriction.
That's true. Absolutely.
So I ask you, in a given month, how many times do you have to tell patients to go on a low sodium regimen?
I want to say almost never.
See, that's interesting. Because as a professional nutritionist, you know that is part of your repertoire and it has to be implemented sometimes.
Perhaps
a person with really
congestive heart failure.
Yeah, a lot of edema.
Yes, absolutely. Something like that. Right. Meniere's. They are actually bugged by, if they get too much sodium in their diet, the water retention or inner ear.
Right. But it is very selective that we apply low sodium.
The other thing is, sodium is really only the middleman. I repeat this over and over to so many patients, and they say, oh, sodium is really the middleman when it comes to blood pressure, because insulin, more often than not, can be the master and commander. Insulin is what determines how much sodium we actually retain.
Right.
So that is everything. If you are insulin resistant and all you're doing is putting yourself on a low salt diet, which can be also very low fat and high carb, you're not helping the insulin resistance. And you're not going to get much benefit from that sodium restriction for that reason. So this is why a thorough assessment is actually very, very helpful. And going on a lower carb diet, which has a very dehydrating effect, is going to help blood pressure.
This is the phenomenon that a lot of Atkins patients told me about.
Yeah.
This is before I espoused Atkins. They would say, you know, I went to Atkins and I lost 11 pounds the first week. It's like, wow, that's not fat that you're losing. You can't lose 11 pounds in a week.
No.
That's a water retention.
Right.
And low carb diet causes a diuresis. Some of it is also avoidance of allergens.
Yes.
Allergens cause your body to puff up, you know, like you know, wheat and dairy allergies and all that stuff. So you get rid of that and then you diurese like crazy. You're going to the bathroom all the time with reduced water retention.
And thus
helping blood pressure.
Absolutely. That's why so many patients that I put on a low-carb diet who had blood pressure issues, they were able to reduce their medication with the supervision of your doctor, please. You don't ever do that on your own.
Right.
And they were able to, many of them were eventually able to come off. And that's what I'm doing, a jig of joy. Because, you know, as a nutritionist, I want everyone on as little medication as possible, except where appropriate, of course.
The key, actually, what we do a lot of at the Hoffman Center is unprescribing.
Unprescribing.
Kind of a cool concept. It's an art. It's an art to take patients off medication the right way and to see if you can strip away as many superfluous, unnecessary medications as possible. We were talking about excess blood pressure medication to begin with, so that concludes our discussion.
Jerry, thank you for your email. Wow. Okay. We have a question from John. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I've been using colloidal silver as a deodorant, and it works great.
Oh, okay. Nice tip.
Topical.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
However, I started thinking of the long-term use of this product and was wondering what you thought about it. I know antiperspirants use aluminum, which is not safe.
Right.
But is using colloidal silver long-term any better?
So let me tell you a bit about the chemistry of aluminum deodorants. What the aluminum hydroxide is it's a desiccating agent. It's a drying agent. And it causes the pores to close, thus restricting sweat, which maybe not such a great idea, but also the possibility that aluminum gets absorbed into the system through the skin. Silver works in a different way. It is not, and it doesn't close the pores per se, but it is antibacterial.
Yeah.
So it's actually sweat has an odor, but you know, stinky sweat is what we want to avoid.
Right.
You know, unless you're, I mean, look, there's this whole issue of, do you want your underarms to look wet? I mean, that's another story. I don't think that the silver is going to help that at all. I think that the aluminum will help that facet of the sweat.
Because it blocks it.
But you know, they're now putting silver threads in athletic clothing.
Yeah.
And we know that the colloidal silver that we use sometimes for sore throats or sometimes
Argentin.
For topical skin infections. Mm-hmm. It's an old-fashioned antibiotic. It's one of the oldest things around. It was used a lot in the early 20th century, the late 19th century.
Right.
Some people drink it. That probably isn't, in my opinion, the greatest idea, you know, for whatever they think they have, Lyme disease.
For long term,
Or Epstein-Barr. You know, I don't think that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But topically, it's okay. I mean, I think we can pass along that suggestion for people to try.
Sure.
You can get it in a gel form. You can get it in a spray bottle. You can get it in liquid that I guess you'd have to paint on or something. I mean, that's not a bad idea.
Right. And for those who don't use anything, you know, it's a route of detoxification, the lymphatic system. We're supposed to sweat certain areas of our body. A little more personal hygiene is always in order if you don't want to use anything. And
but, you know, there are actually benefits to sauna. Part of it is from the detoxification, but part of it is that there seems to be something about the body's adaptation to heat that is really healthy because it is a stress. And, you know, when you're sitting there in the sauna, we've talked about this before, you know, I look at my pulse, I have a pulse meter, and my pulse can go way up. It's almost like a workout, you know.
Interesting.
But I call this paleo temperature control. You know, we talk about paleo lifestyle, like the paleo diet, paleo sleep, which might involve, you know, going to sleep when it gets dark and, you know, waking up in the middle of the night to, you know, sit around the campfire or, you know, tell tales or, you know, hang out, make love, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And then go back to sleep. That's more of a paleo style of sleep, especially in the winter.
Two sleeps,
it's the bifurcated sleep. But paleo temperature control is interesting because it's good to be cold and it's good to be hot. And we have very little opportunity to be outside our comfort zone. We are in air-conditioned apartments in the summer, and in, you know, we have overheated apartments in the winter, and it's important to get into the elements.
That's true. That's true.
So I like a good run, you know, where I'm sweating like crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I like to get out there on a really cold day and walk and feel
some chill, get the brown fat going, which is
needles,
more metabolically active.
Yeah, brown fat is
activated. It's good to be a little chilly.
Yep.
They say, you know, turn your thermostat down to 60 degrees, but don't start putting sweaters on. T-shirt and a pair of shorts in 60 degrees, that could be tough to do after a little while, but I guess as long as you're moving around, that could
be
pretty good.
But climb under the blankets, when it's cold, you know, in the room, and you'll sleep really nicely.
That's true. I love a cold room for sleep, actually. Okay, John, thank you for your question. Oh, we have a question from Ron.
Oh, my.
Dr. Hoffman.
Sometimes when there's not enough questions, I just, like, throw one in.
You throw one in. Right. You sent this, right?
Right.
I have a substantial family history of cardiovascular disease and heart attack death. My cholesterol is holding well currently. I take flush-free niacin. I take a bit of aspirin. I take Cholestoff Complete. I take Chlorella.
Okay.
Can I add bergamot to this?
Okay. So, you know, this kind of goes to the fundamental question before I tell them what to take or what not to take.
Yeah.
Is, does it matter? And, you know, some people are cholesterol nihilists.
Yeah.
You know, they don't believe, they think it's all bunk. Mm-hmm. And I disagree with that. I think that cholesterol is a risk factor. Why not? It is a risk factor, but it's not the determinant of cardiovascular
yeah.
risk. So I think it's a more reasonable position to accept that cholesterol can be a risk factor, but not always, and that efforts to lower cholesterol sometimes are unnecessary mm-hmm. and may even be deleterious, because we know that people with ultra-low cholesterol may have a higher propensity to dementia
yeah.
and other health problems, you know. Whether it's low cholesterol is the cause of the problem or just a accompaniment of being ill,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not clear. Is it the cause of the problems? But so what I would, if this were a patient, we do this very frequently, is I would look at all the whole picture, not just cholesterol, but, you know, what are some of the other risk factors? Is it a family risk factor? Is there inflammation with a C-reactive protein?
Sure.
Is the particle size good, which we can sort of...
we can handle that with nutrition,
yeah,
particle size.
We can change that with
mm-hmm.
nutrition.
Lipoprotein little a.
Lipoprotein A, apolipoprotein A and B, homocysteine, which we can address with B vitamins and trimethylglycine.
Yeah.
And then the ultimate thing is get an EBT heart scan, because
mm-hmm.
there's a disconnect. Some people who think they're at high risk have very little risk because
mm-hmm.
they have almost no plaque. So... I mean, I don't think I'm the best example of that. I think on paper, I look pretty good. You know, I'm at the normal weight. I do have a family history of heart disease, but not that strong a history. I have, good level of athleticism. But my cholesterol is a little high. It can be 210, 230 at times. But my HDL is high at 70. So... I had an EBT heart scan, zero plaque. So that means, you know, when I went and plugged in my data
mm-hmm.
into one of these standard cholesterol risk calculators,
yeah.
it said you need to be on a moderate to aggressive cholesterol lowering regimen.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be on a statin.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we just looked at that, and by the way, I'm a 64-year-old male, so they think we're all ready to keel over. You know, it's like, why not take a statin?
If cholesterol does go higher as we get older, if it's a phenomenon, it could be the body trying to save itself. I mean, the brain...
There is that thought, it's a repair substance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a repair substance. It's also considered an antioxidant, although mm-hmm. cardiologists don't necessarily know that. And it could be protecting from dementia as we get older. So
mm-hmm.
I think that might be another reason.
Well,
the studies from even the 1970s and 80s show us somebody... in their 80s with a total cholesterol of, say, 268, lives longer
yes.
than somebody with a lower cholesterol.
Especially in the older population. If
yeah.
I see somebody, an old person, like in your late 80s or 90s, and their cholesterol is 300, not to worry. That's a
yeah.
good sign. That's
yeah.
a good sign.
But I've seen their doctor on an 82-year-old who's had no history of heart disease at all, well, your cholesterol is 235, we need to put you on a statin.
Mistake.
But this is standard.
It's the guidelines. It's a rookie error. It's a rookie mistake. But coming back to the premise of this question, you know, the things to take. Well, he's already taking cholestoff, it's called.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like a Russian name, cholestoff. Like
cholesterol off.
My name is again.
My name is Ivan Cholestoff.
Ivan Cholestoff. You know. Well, anyway, it's a product. I know that product. It's a product that contains bergamot, I think.
I believe so.
But it also contains plant phytosterols.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think that's it.
Yeah.
I think it's
so plant phytosterols are good. Yeah. Okay.
Sterols
and phytosterols.
Mm-hmm.
You know, niacin, yeah, that'll lower cholesterol,
mm-hmm.
although niacin has not been proven in studies to lower cardiovascular risk. It's, you know, it's an example of, we now have powerful drugs
mm-hmm.
that have been shown to raise HDL, you know, the very expensive, fancy drugs that failed
mm-hmm.
because on paper the numbers look better, but it didn't translate to improvement in risk.
Yeah.
But so niacin is one of those things where, I'm not that... keen on it, because especially because of the side effects, it can affect the liver.
Right,
it can cause terrible flushing.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, I'm very excited about bergamot. Bergamot has helped a lot of our patients lower cholesterol
yeah.
by double digits, big double digits.
I wonder if there's a study that looks at drinkers of Earl Grey tea to see what their cholesterol is.
I think there are studies that look
at tea
drinkers per se, mm-hmm. and especially green tea drinkers, but also just mm-hmm. tea drinkers have lower risk of cardiovascular disease. I have to say, I never caught on to the tea craze. I don't like to drink tea that much occasionally. I'll have a glass of tea.
Yeah.
My grandfather lived to be 101, always had a nice glass tea. Mm-hmm. And the way he had it was he had it without milk in a glass. It had to
be in
a glass.
Yeah.
And he added lemon mm-hmm. and he had this rock salt. You know, that rock salt. Rock sugar.
Rock sugar. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sugar right. crystal.
Yeah,
like big honking.
Yeah. What would have been nuggets, sugar cubes?
Nuggets of sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah. That he would put in there, and he would stir it around with the lemon, and he would sip that, and was like, you know, he'd be, you know, happy as a clam because it reminded him of Warsaw. You know.
Tea with sugar and milk, for me as a kid, that was the cure-all.
The milk is, however, interferes with the effects of the beneficial catechins.
Mm-hmm.
So it's maybe mm-hmm. not as helpful.
It's interesting how dentists will say, I remember a dentist saying, put milk in your tea so it doesn't stain your teeth. So
another wives' tale.
That's okay. No, I love tea straight up.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so that runs the clock for us. Interesting questions, and we have some remaining. We will invite our listeners to send us questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. And if you want to be part of the live show, you can call us during our show on Saturdays from noon to 2 p.m. You can listen via the Internet, which is, I think, the best mm-hmm. way to listen these days, no mm-hmm. matter where you are. You're always close to the Internet. And at drhoffman.com, if you click on the listen button, there's a drop-down menu that tells you how you can listen to the show regularly. I'll remind you that we are entering a new era with our dispensary at the Hoffman Center. We're going to a new system that I think is going to offer a lot of advantages. It's the full script system. And soon when you click on shop at the Hoffman Center, you'll be ushered into the very vast repository of supplements that we've curated for both listeners and patients alike mm-hmm. with ease of ordering. So check it out. Support our podcast by buying supplements via drhoffman.com. And we'll continue to offer you the best of health information on a daily basis. Great podcasts, great Q&A sessions like this with Layla, and radio broadcasts that are live. Or you can listen to the podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.